And we're back live. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope you guys are enjoying Microsoft Ignite New Zealand here in Sky City, in Sky City Theater. On the couch today, we happen to have a gentleman that's near and dear to my heart because we've been having a fantastic conversation for the last 10 minutes that Golnaz has been absolutely loving about IOPS disk performance and storage and compute performance issues. Well, it's good to see you again. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to the camera, what's going on, and also the session you've been talking about so far.
Cool. Hey, thank you so much for inviting me here today. So my name's Daniel Bobiers. I'm innovation lead for Datacom's cloud teams down in Wellington. Datacom is one of the largest tech companies in New Zealand. We've got over 5,000 staff now.
Yes.
Across five different countries, actually. So it's really cool. I'm doing a couple of sessions at Ignite. I did a session this morning on Azure Site Recovery and how we can use that to DR virtual machines up to Azure. And I've got a session tomorrow on optimizing Azure storage and compute for cost and performance.
Right.
And the crux of that is it's more than just the number of cores you have and how much memory.
Now I like how you tacked on, almost like in brackets, cost and performance for stuff like that. So share a little bit of insight on some of what's going on. Because when I think about performance, stuff like that, I just need to worry about, I'll use my A-series machines for this, and if I need some big performance, I'll go through some Ds, and maybe if I'm really kind of feeling kind of edgy, I'll throw a G in there just for fun. That's a little bit reckless, I'm assuming, according to what we should be doing. Is that correct?
Exactly. You know, this is about understanding the performance targets and the limits of the different series of virtual machines, but also understanding truly what your workloads require as well. And so it's thinking about things like how much temp storage you need, how many network interfaces you need to attach to your virtual machines, what latency you're requiring out of your storage, and also the network bandwidth which is associated with those virtual machines as well. So we need to bring all of that together. And yeah, look, anybody, no disrespect, can throw a GS5 series virtual machine at a workload and get an extension on their credit card.
Nice.
And it's gonna perform. But this is about how do we make it perform, but in the most cost optimal way possible. And we talked about, you know, FinOps, and this is where this kind of comes into it is, how do we financially optimize this?
Did you coin that new term now? Is it officially trademarked in New Zealand?
Oh, I wish. No, I stole it with pride off someone else about 3 weeks ago. I heard it announced. I thought, I really like that.
Nice. So I'm assuming from a consulting perspective in your current life and also your past life, stuff like that, how did you decide to do the differentiation between different family sizes? The A's versus the D's and the G's, and now the F's and the H's and the L's. And
the N series.
And N series as well. How do you kind of balance that out? It would give us the crib note sheet way of being able to do that kind of differentiation. Where you get your biggest payoffs.
That's a really interesting one, actually. It's about understanding the underlying infrastructure, and that's physical virtual machines, which these different series run on. And you know, the way I look at it is, A series are great for my dev test workloads.
Right.
They're also really good for those auto-scaling groups when I want to scale out massively across really cheap, cost-effective instances. For me, the D series, they're more those kind of workhorse production type of machines. They run on the faster processor, so I get a much bigger processor than my A series. And I don't get the same limits around some of my IOPS and my network throughput. You know, I'd love to say in New Zealand I had a customer which had a requirement for like a GS5 series virtual machine, which is basically Microsoft provides us a whole blade just for that one virtual machine.
Yeah.
But they are more of your sort of the SAP, HANA, SQL type workloads. And then for the H series, for me that's more of around your genomic research, your financial risk, that high performance computing side of things. And then obviously you've got your GPUs and your N series, which are for those more specialized workloads in the desktop 3D. So, but you know, a part of it is about horses for courses and really matching your application's requirements with those different metrics that those virtual machines have.
Now, I'm gonna assume that this is gonna be a little bit of a challenge to be able to go off and talk with different dev teams and architect teams to have them really kind of nail down to what exactly are those performance numbers? What are some tricks that you might have used in the past to be able to say, Because honestly, I don't remember the last time I've had a good conversation around, so how many IOPS is that database query going to have for you anyway? Like how do you kind of milk this kind of stuff out?
Look, it is a really hard one because people just don't know. So one of the things I talk about is, you know, it's about understanding scale units that sit underneath your Azure infrastructure and understanding how those scale units affect my different virtual machine resizing options that I have. Because often what people do is they deploy an A basic series virtual machine and then they try and resize it up to a GS series virtual machine. And that doesn't work, right?
Yeah,
there, inside Azure, there's this concept of scale units. I think of it like containers, and I kind of visualize someone dropping this container into the data center all full of new kick-ass hardware that supports a certain virtual machine type.
Mm-hmm.
So what I say is, let's figure out what the biggest size virtual machine we're going to need for this workload. Let's deploy that, and then let's scale that virtual machine down as small as we can go.
Right.
Then we're going to know we're in a scale unit that supports both extremes. Then we've got a little bit of trial and error that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can look at our database queries. We can understand the I/O that we're likely to get and the size of that IOPS. And we can understand how susceptible our application is to disk latency. But strange things happen under load. And so, you know, there is a bit of sort of magic to it,
yep.
And a bit of trial and error as well. And as we were talking before, you know, I think I love DevOps, but DevOps is about things not breaking. It's about not being woken up in the middle of the night. Sometimes when you're kind of doing FinOps, that does break stuff and you push it a bit far and you need to dial it back again.
Right.
So it's making sure you understand the limits that you can work within.
The good thing is that you can adjust that dial, and it's something you can do.
That's right.
And then you're only paying for what you use for as long as you happen to be using it for, which is always very good.
Yeah, and you're not having to destroy the virtual machine and redeploy it,
right?
Which you can do, but then you've got to relink it back up with load balancers,
yeah.
And it's a bit more of a sort of a mission to do.
Now, I've noticed that you've gone through, from your bio here, that you've been through a couple of different roles in the last little while. Tell me about, from a career perspective, what you were doing a couple of years ago, how that's kind of evolved in the cloud world as it is now, and then what you're doing right now in your current role at Datacom.
Cool, yeah. So I've always been interested in Azure and the cloud. Now, Datacom, the company I work for, we've invested a lot of money in data centers in New Zealand, and traditionally we've been a data center and IaaS player. And so, you know, when public cloud first came along, it was quite a competitor essentially to Datacom.
Mm-hmm.
And so spent quite a bit of time going, hey, I think this public cloud thing is something we should get into, and being told, hey, look, we're investing lots of money in data centers, maybe not. But then I actually presented at Ignite year before last on Azure Active Directory.
Yep.
And after that session, Datacom said, look, we'd actually like you to explore this public cloud thing a bit more. How do you feel about starting a consulting team in Wellington to go and prove to us the market for public cloud and how, as an organization, you know, it's actually complementary to what we do. And I thought, wow, you read the memo I sent you a couple of months ago. That's excellent.
Yes.
So I started this team called Cloud Consult. And small team, as you do, very startup mentality. It's my team to run, my P&L.
Yep.
And we did really well, and it was a huge year running your own business, trying to do the marketing and the sales and HR. HR's fun. And I learned heaps.
Yeah.
And then we got around to doing the business planning for the next financial year. And I kind of looked at it and went, look, Datacom, I think we need to have a chat here, because there are two ways we can go. I can grow out this cloud consult team, and I'll need some investment and funding to do that. But we're going to take a lot of work away from a lot of the other teams within Datacom.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could get in behind and push. And actually, I could enable, and my team could enable all of the other Datacom teams to be able to do this public cloud thing, as well as all of the great other, you know, on-premises services that we provide to customers. And I was really pleased when a month or two later, Datacom came back and said, hey, we actually really want you to get behind and push. So now I'm innovation lead for the CNS group, so that's cloud network and security. And a big part of my role is helping the other wider Datacom teams be really successful in this hybrid cloud that we're finding ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And you know, I still get out to talk to customers, and it's evangelism by another name. We call it visible thought leadership, which I love.
Yeah,
and you know, some people say I'm a professional coffee drinker, which I am. But it's really cool because, you know, we're showing that actually, as a company, we can support customers across the full spectrum, from on-premises infrastructure, hosted infrastructure, all the way through into Azure.
Okay.
And you know, Azure Stack's coming out as well.
Yep.
And that's all part of that hybrid cloud ecosystem that we're building. So it's hugely exciting times, and really awesome to be part of that, and part of that journey that Datacom's going on.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming that some of the learnings that you have for going through this different transition made it into your session potentially around doing Azure Site Recovery, because you're talking about taking on-premises technology and making it so that it can be stored and backed up and available inside of other data centers or inside of the public cloud side of things. Did it make it in? Is it part of where this knowledge is coming from?
Yeah, look, I've worked with some awesome customers over the last year, some really, really cool customers.
Yeah.
And you know, in New Zealand, there's a lot of small customers by sort of American standards, that 20 to 100 kind of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, the most number of businesses in New Zealand are actually sort of the 3 to 10 staff type businesses. So I've worked with some really cool customers that we've enabled with those technologies. Mm-hmm. Azure Site Recovery is a really key one to start that transition to Azure. And customers which could never afford to have DR previously,
mm-hmm.
or their disaster recovery was a tape that got, you know,
external multi-terabyte drive you take someplace to be able to go off and use.
That's right.
Yeah.
And actually just 2 months ago, you know, we put in full Azure Site Recovery for this customer with all of their servers protected across into Azure.
Okay. An
RDS Gateway server sitting in their Azure subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and their staff, we're just training at the moment, that's in the DR event, they'll be able to connect to that RDS server and access all of their software sitting in Azure. And this customer's, they're not remote, but they're not in the CBD. So they struggle to have resilient connections into their premises.
Yeah.
So they are quite concerned that actually, you know, New Zealand, we do have earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
And Wellington has lots of fault lines. That in an earthquake or the likes, they want to be able to continue to provide services to their customers. So that was a really cool customer to be working with around an ASR.
Mm-hmm.
And the optimization piece around the compute and storage, a big part of that is, you know, compute and storage is so fundamental to all of the other tiers that sit on top.
Right.
And it's kind of, if we can get that right and you can understand it, then actually those same learnings that you apply there,
mm-hmm.
you can apply up the whole stack, and everything's optimized. It's good, strong foundations.
Yeah. Do you find a lot of the stuff that you've learned over the years working in data centers and working at Datacom as an example, apply inside of the cloud environment as far as your basic fundamentals of doing performance monitoring, doing analysis of the different types of systems, or is there a tweak or a twist that you have to apply to use those same skills?
Look, I think there's a bit of both. I think it is nuanced,
mm-hmm.
and there's definitely new ways of doing things in the public cloud. But I think also a lot of those fundamentals still apply.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about Azure with customers, and I say, look, you've got to get this kind of concept that in some respects, we still have to build this virtual data center for you. You know, we have to get your subscription right. And we have to get your identity foundations right.
Right.
And we need to get that networking in place. Now, it's quicker, it's easier. If we get it wrong, it's far easier to refactor it.
Okay, good.
We don't have a pallet load of switches arriving that don't have the right SFPs or the wrong optics on them.
Right.
But we still have to think about those things. We still have to get it right. because again, it enables us to have these higher level services that sit on top. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, it takes away that cost so we can actually put more money into the things that matter, which is our customers' experience, driving value into our customers' ecosystems, mm-hmm. and getting true business value out of it.
Okay.
It's accelerating that process dramatically.
Okay. So if you could think of one quick hit, which would be the surprise that happened over the last little while between your two different sessions, your stuff you brought in, what would be the interesting surprise nugget that you have that you wanted to share about the performance side from compute and storage for that one particular session?
Okay, so for compute and performance, my nugget there would be that don't be afraid to look at the premium options, mm-hmm. and scaling up a single instance as opposed to scaling out. Now let me unpack that. In the cloud, we have all these examples about this great, you know, parallel computing sort of examples,
right.
where we put lots of really small virtual machines in, we go really wide, and it does awesome things. But there's cost involved in that as well. And sometimes it can be cheaper to spend a bit more in one area, mm-hmm. premium storage is a great example, because we can actually attach have a much smaller virtual machine to access that. Whereas if we use standard storage, we have to have lots of disks to achieve that same performance.
Right.
And yes, the storage is cheaper, but actually the virtual machine we need to access that is a lot more expensive.
Okay.
So in one of my examples, I have I can save a third of the running cost, two-thirds of the running cost, just by putting in premium storage and mm-hmm. having a smaller virtual machine to access that storage. So, you know, you've got to truly understand the different components that you're working with and how they perform and what that does to the things either side of that component.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the upstream and downstream effects of changing that one component? So, you know, in New Zealand, we're quite generalists. You know, we talk about this number eight wire mentality, which is, you know, it kind of, we just get in there and do it. And for us, being really wide is something that we do in New Zealand. Now, I'm aware that overseas sometimes people can be quite specialized in certain areas. So when I talk to my customers, they're across that whole stack. So for them, it's an easier thing to go, all right, I can look at all these different services and see how they hang together and see how when I make a change here, actually it has an effect over here as well. And so I need to synchronize those together.
Excellent. Well, I'm getting the sign over here that we're gonna need to be wrapping up in just about a second or two, but I wanna say thank you very much for
Thank you so
us.
Much.
It's been good talking with you, Daniel. Coming up next on the live stream is going to be Windows 10 deployments, what I wish I knew before I started. It sounds like an interesting session to go ahead. But don't forget to tune back afterwards. We're going to have a nice little wrap-up after the event with Seth and myself, and we'll be back here on Channel 9 Live.